KUT and KUTX listeners, the stream you've connected to is going silent on April 20th. You're likely using an old bookmark, app, or link that's been around a long time. Please visit kut.org/streams. That's kut.org/streams for more information. If you're still hearing this message next time you listen, there's a form at the bottom of that page that you can fill in for help. Our websites, apps, and npr.org are updated, so you can tune in there. Thank you for listening and supporting our stations.
This is KUT Weekend for the first weekend of March 2016. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier. Here's what we got for you this week. Obstacles college students face in voting.
Yeah, I just went to vote, and when I got to the front of the line, I was rejected because I'm registered in Bexar County, and so I couldn't vote in Travis County.
The growth of Austin's homeless population.
In every city council district, in every Travis County precinct.
And a local group called Boss Babes ATX trying to help women succeed as entrepreneurs.
As soon as I started going to these meetups, I got referral after referral.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. But first, just a reminder, if you haven't already, to subscribe to this podcast, weekend.kut.org is the place to go to find links to our iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and RSS feeds. If you haven't already, please leave us a review in the Apple Podcasts app or in the iTunes store. It just takes a second. And if you have any questions or comments, you can email news@kut.org. You can also reach me directly, Nathan@KUT.org, and on Twitter, I'm @KUTNathan. The general election is not until November, but a lot of the decisions about who will assume various positions of power in Texas were decided this week because many contests have no Democratic opponent, or in the case of Travis County, they often have no Republican running in November, or if there is a Republican, that Republican faces long odds in a county where Democrats tend to outvote Republicans by a 2-to-1 margin or more. Now, that's one of the reasons why so many people were watching the Democratic primary for Travis County Sheriff. Sally Hernandez won and barely avoided a runoff. KUT Syeda Hassan has the results of that race.
The celebration started early at the Sally Hernandez watch party and continued on through the night. The Precinct 3 constable swept the competition in the Travis County Sheriff's race, quickly gaining a majority of the vote.
I'm very excited, very glad that the voters listened to the issues, and it was a great race.
Hernandez's early win came as a surprise. With four candidates vying for the Democratic nomination, many assumed the sheriff's race would go to a runoff. Looking to the November election, she says her campaign strategy will remain the same.
We'll continue to reach out to voters, but we'll have the help of the Democratic Party going into the general election.
One of the central issues in the sheriff's race has been the Priority Enforcement Program, which used to be called Secure Communities. The federal program flags people booked into the Travis County Jail who may be in the country illegally, potentially leading to deportation. Hernandez wants to end Travis County's voluntary participation. Austin resident Gopal Guthikonda says Hernandez's position on secure communities earned his vote.
And she showed how much she cared about all the different people and the issues that particularly the immigrant community is facing right now.
Hernandez will take on the sole Republican candidate, Joe Martinez, in November. Syeda Hassan, KUT News.
You probably know by now that Hillary Clinton won the majority of delegates in the Democratic presidential primary in Texas, although Bernie Sanders did get more votes in Travis County. He got 51% of the vote here. Clinton got 48%. That other percentage point went to other candidates who were on the Democratic presidential ballot. KUT's Mose Bouchel was with a bunch of Sanders supporters on election night.
At the Bernie Sanders party on 6th Street, it was a youthful crowd. I talked to Gracie Willis. She's an immigration lawyer and Sanders volunteer. Of the Sanders versus Clinton dynamic, she said,
yeah, it's been interesting because obviously as a woman, I would love to see a woman in the White House. And part of me is very excited to see this opportunity for her. I feel motivated by the greater change that I see Senator Sanders advocating.
She named taking money out of politics and increasing economic opportunity as big issues. As the night continued and Clinton started racking up more delegates, organizers tried to keep the crowd positive.
Tonight is just one step. Do not let the results in Texas set you back.
Chuck Rocha is a Sanders strategist who spoke after the Texas results were called.
We built out an organization, and tonight is just one step and a long step and a long journey, and we'll all feel the burn. Thank you so much.
I think that we've done fantastic. I mean, considering what we were up against.
Julianne Nitsch is an Austin campaign organizer who says the movement started by Sanders will continue beyond this election.
The only way that we will ever lose is if we stop fighting.
Of course, primary campaigns also lose by not getting enough delegates. Later in the night, I caught up with Gracie Willis again and asked if she saw Democrats unifying around whoever the eventual nominee is.
For you, that might be a bummer of a question.
It's a total bummer.
You know, would you support the nominee eventually, or do you see the party kind of getting together? And
yeah, I mean, all of the GOP nominees are terrifying.
I asked her what she meant by that.
As an immigration lawyer, I am particularly bothered by the xenophobia. And by, we're not speaking in past tense.
But some people weren't speaking at all. They were watching Republican frontrunner Donald Trump give a press conference on TV. Moz Bushel, KET News.
In the Republican presidential race, Ted Cruz won Texas and Oklahoma. KUT's Kate McGee went to a Donald Trump watch party and was surprised at how few people were there.
The only voice you could hear at the Ten Oak Bar downtown was Donald Trump himself from his press conference on the TV. The bar was expecting around 50 people to show up for the Trump watch party, but it was mostly quiet. Fewer than 10 people showed up to watch, and even fewer wanted to talk.
I didn't want to answer.
Dude.
I didn't want to answer.
Dude. You don't want to answer?
Very professional.
Is there a reason why?
Because you're a reporter.
Why don't you want to talk to a reporter?
I'll give you a guess.
Supporter said the media has misconstrued Trump's platform and blown comments and situations on the campaign trail out of proportion. They say they support Trump because they like his bluntness, that he's funding his own campaign, which is partly true, and that, in their words, he puts America first. Beyond that, few supporters could provide more specifics. When I asked one supporter, who wouldn't give me his real name, what issues were important to him, he said,
There are a lot.
Anything that comes is more important than another, something that comes to the top of the pile?
Can't say no.
Except for Andrew Delaney. He thinks Trump is the only candidate who isn't a, quote, bag man for corporate interests.
Whether it's entanglements in foreign wars, whether it's trade agreements like the TPP that divert jobs overseas, Trump is really the only one who has the ability to not be completely beholden to these lobbies.
Senator Ted Cruz won the primary in Texas and in Oklahoma, but Trump won primaries in at least six other states. Kate McGee, KUT News.
Now, last night, Thursday night, Cruz made another push to be the number two candidate in the Republican presidential primary. KUT's Ben Philpott reports on whether he was able to make any headway in the debate against frontrunner Donald Trump.
One thing that helped Cruz last night was that he wasn't the only person who had started taking swings at Trump. From 2012 GOP nominee Mitt Romney to dozens of conservative columnists to Marco Rubio and John Kasich, each has made stopping Trump the top priority. In fact, for much of the debate last night, Cruz sat back and watched Rubio and Trump fight. But in the second half, the Texas senator took his shots, specifically trying to raise doubts about just how conservative Trump really is.
You cannot care about conservative Supreme Court justices and support John Kerry for president as Donald did. You cannot care about conservative Supreme Court justices and support Harry Reid for Senate Majority Leader. Senator. And you cannot care about conservative Supreme Court justices and write four checks to Hillary Clinton for her to be president if you care at all about the Second Amendment or religious liberty or anything else.
Gentlemen, we're going to move on.
It may not take long to see if those kinds of attacks worked. Republicans vote in four states tomorrow. Ben Philpott, KUT News.
President presidential primaries and the general election that follows usually have a lot higher turnout than an off-year election. And that turnout includes many more young people who are excited to participate in their first presidential election. But as KUT's Ashley Lopez reports, college students in Texas faced more hurdles to the ballot box than ever.
I'm going to run you through a couple scenarios that keep college students from voting. All of these, by the way, are examples of things that actually happened to students in Texas during this past election. I'll start with a pretty common one. Here's Ariana Sonzino, a student at UT Austin.
Yeah, I just went to vote, and when I got to the front of the line, I was rejected because I'm registered in Bexar County, and so I couldn't vote in Travis County.
This happens a lot because college students often leave their hometown to go to school. They also commonly move year to year. So voting can be complicated because they have to re-register so much. And even those who do the paperwork sometimes face issues at the polls. Here's another UT Austin student, Vanessa Beltran.
I felt that I tried to do all of the right things, you know, like I had registered in my hometown. And then when I got here, I registered in Austin. And then being a student, I changed addresses, you know, one year to the other, and I changed my address. And even so, when I got to the polling station, I had to fill out another change of address form because it hadn't been processed, even though I did that quite a while ago.
Beltran said she's lucky she had the time that day to take the extra steps to vote. She wishes it had been easier, but voting has actually gotten harder in Texas, especially if you're transient. In 2011, the state legislature passed a law requiring voters show one of seven approved forms of photo ID in order to cast a ballot regardless of whether they have a voter registration card. Maria Peralta is part of a nonpartisan coalition of lawyers called Election Protection. She says her group, which helps people facing problems at the polls, got quite a few calls from Texas.
So I can give you a few examples. There was one woman, a Texas voter, who reported that she registered to vote with her Social Security number. And when she went to the polls, she only had a driver's license from another state.
Peralta says the woman left the polling location without voting. She was eventually advised to cast a provisional ballot, which Peralta says isn't ideal. She says her group also got a call from an employee with the Department of Homeland Security. He also had to vote provisionally because his TSA ID wasn't accepted.
You know, it pointed to the irony of the law that's currently on the books, because this is a ID that requires a high level of security to obtain.
UT Austin student Seth Krasny says he heard the same kind of issues from his friends.
Just one of my friends was telling me that yesterday she stood in line at the FAC for 3 hours and then realized she had brought an old ID and couldn't vote and was turned away. And by then it was too late because it was after 7.
The problem here is that the list of IDs you can use to vote are pretty restrictive. On the short list are a Texas driver's license, a U.S. passport, a Texas concealed handgun license, or a military ID. But you can't use a student ID, even if it's from a state university like UT. Dana Debevoise, the Travis County clerk, says it's already really hard to reach out and make sure college students took all the steps necessary to vote.
It is very difficult to reach out, especially to the young, those young people who are a little bit transient. And it is very difficult to explain why students can't use their student ID. It's a perfectly valid form of identification, and Texas could have used it. Other states like Indiana use it.
Krasny says he finds this endlessly frustrating.
I think you often hear, I was listening to CNN the other day, and they were talking about how the youth vote is unreliable. And I was, you know, getting really upset because it's not unreliable, but the system makes it so difficult to do.
Out of the state's 5 most populous counties, Travis County had the most provisional ballots cast. Debevoise says it's likely because there are a lot of college students here and a lot of people new to Austin. She says allowing same-day registration would also be a big help, but state officials haven't been keen on it. A spokeswoman for the Secretary of State's office says problems related to the voter ID law still aren't widespread. A federal court struck down Texas's law back in 2014, but because it was close to an election, the law was allowed to stay in effect. The law's future is now in the hands of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
Back in January, almost 500 volunteers fanned out across Travis County to try and get a handle on the number of people living on the streets or in camps or in shelters. ECHO, the Ending Community Homelessness Coalition, conducted its annual point-in-time count. What did they find? Well, the population of people experiencing homelessness in Austin was up by about 20% this year from last. Volunteers counted almost 2,200 people without housing. And that does not count people doubling up in housing or bunking on someone's couch. KUT's Jennifer Staten heard from Echo's executive director, Ann Howard, that volunteers encountered people without housing countywide.
We found people in every city council district, in every Travis County precinct. So folks are outside all across this community.
Why do you all think you did see an uptick in that number from 2015 to 2016?
We have a housing crisis for people at the very lowest income levels. This community that's robust is also sort of bulging at the bottom, and that's where we've got to do some work.
When you look back before 2015, if you think back to numbers 2014, 2013, 2012, do you see a trend in those numbers over time leading up to this year? Is this something that's been developing?
Actually, the last time we had a number at this level was 2012. And since then, we had been seeing a drop of about 150 to 200 people each year. That always surprised us, to be honest, not because we weren't doing good work, but because we were sending more and more volunteers out to do the count. I would say last year there was sort of a thought, we're gonna find more people, but we didn't. Now, this year, we had over 500 people counting. It was very strategic. We knew where to look because we had done other outreach events during the year. You know, we probably got an A+ on how we did it, and the number went up. You know, Austin has grown by about 3% over the, I think, the last 3 to 4 years. The questions we need to ask are, you know, at what point does growth like that create sort of an uptick in the most vulnerable situations?
One question that often comes up that we sort of hear again anecdotally is, don't other cities in Texas, Dallas, Houston, literally send people from their cities who are experiencing homelessness to Austin? Is there any truth to that?
I would emphatically say no.
And why do you emphatically say no?
I say that for a couple of reasons. We surveyed the folks living on the streets a couple of years ago intentionally, and it could be it's still in every homeless count survey, but when we were intentional about it, the data reflected a large majority, over 70% or so, are from Central Texas. I think when you look at Houston, they have been able to house thousands of people. They have housing. They've built housing. They have all these sprawling old apartment complexes. People don't need to come to Austin. We don't have an abundance of housing or services. I have clients, families, individuals who are waiting to, you know, to get into housing or be connected to a case manager. So, and you see it's the homeless count is up in these other areas.
The city seems to have a reputation in other places as being a place where there are abundant services and that people who are experiencing homelessness should somehow get there because there's tons available.
You know, our local government, the city and the county, have been recognizing the need to do more by health and human services and affordable housing. But we don't traditionally, or we haven't over the years, in fact, I did research over the last 2 decades, health and human service dollars are way at the bottom compared to parks, libraries, law enforcement. So generous, maybe, progressive, maybe, but I don't think so when it comes to this part of our community.
Where does Echo go from here? Knowing the numbers from the point in time count for 2016 and knowing that they were up about 20% from 2015, where does that leave you all as far as strategy and your the coalition services?
Right. Well, despite those numbers being up, in 2015, almost 2,000 folks who had been homeless did move into housing. So we know what to do. We know the type of housing people need. We have, you know, a prioritization list of folks based on vulnerability. And we're finding, once you know who they are, you have to keep stay in touch with them and then working to match them to the housing we have. We don't have enough housing. And so going forward, we just have to increase our partnerships with housing providers.
Ann Howard is Executive Director of ECHO, the Ending Community Homelessness Coalition. Ann, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
The city of Austin lost 1,200 music-related jobs over a recent four-year period. That's according to a report funded by the industry and music advocates, Austin Music People. And 20% of musicians in the city are living below the poverty line. So this week, the Austin City Council began taking steps to try to improve that. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey explains how the council discussion to save music went to the tune of a song.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality.
Austin's music reality. Here's how Mayor Steve Adler summed that up Thursday.
We don't stay the live music capital of the world for very long if we lose all our musicians, and certainly if we lose our music venues.
Council directed staff to investigate a list of music-saving ideas Adler composed. Among those, adding a musician's gratuity to bar bills and creating a foundation that would facilitate sponsorship opportunities for musicians. Speaking of, where'd that song go?
Carry on.
Oh, that reminds me. Councilmember Ann Kitchen added an amendment to make sure some things in Austin's music scene would carry on.
Our options for protecting existing space as we continue to develop throughout our city, particularly in areas that are closer to town and those that are developing extensively, where we are at risk of losing existing studio space.
Then sounded the steady voice of fiscal conservatism.
Gotta leave you all behind and face the
Councilmember Don Zimmerman.
Does anybody know what the things related to item 19 are costing the taxpayers?
Zimmerman wanted to know how much money the city had spent on music in the past 5 years.
And the number is over $8.5 million.
He added, it was that spending that made the city unaffordable for all, including those making and supporting music. Speaking of... Adler says his intent behind this list of ideas is not to create a government-subsidized music industry.
Ultimately, we need to create an ecosystem, an industry that is self-supporting, and verticals within that industry so that people who go into music or the arts or creative industries can survive in this community, can live in this community.
In other words, we will not let you go, Austin musicians, but the council won't be approving any big bailouts either. The city manager will present a plan of action to the council's Economic Opportunity Committee by June. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
So you think you can love me and leave me to die? Oh, baby.
Austin has grown a lot, and so has its downtown nightlife. And for the Austin Police Department, that's meant an increase in policing, and occasionally it gets ugly.
Get out!
That was an incident in which three people were taken to jail for jaywalking and one of them for resisting arrest. They were released shortly thereafter, and now there's a lawsuit over it. But I wanted to know how APD is responding to the growth of the downtown entertainment districts. And the Austin Chronicle's Chase Hoffberger has a great story on this. So he's here with me now. Hey, Chase.
Hey, Nathan. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks. So you followed APD around downtown.
I think I spent one night with them and then a couple nights watching them and then just a lot of time talking with cops who had worked that beat or are aware of the concerns of the people who work that beat. So you know, basically across the board, you're seeing growth. And that's not just in bars, but also in residents. I actually got a stat from the Arch after the story ran that they're running at, I think, like 250% capacity. You know, so there are more homeless living or spending their time down there. Basically, everything's gotten bigger.
How is the Austin Police Department responding to this?
Well, it's how they're trying to respond versus how they are able to. There's a serious staffing shortage at APD. It's very well publicized. And if APD was to try to employ their standard per capita staffing numbers, their shifts would get bigger. They would have more people on the beat as usual. What we're seeing instead is that they're actually having to run mandatory vacancies on each shift. So while shifts have 12 officers assigned to patrol, now only 11 are going out. They're sort of a bit more strained than they used to be.
What did you observe on your ride along, so to speak?
A lot of times what you see is a lot of kindness from cops. You see them joking around in ways that you don't in other parts of town. I mean, this is as close as people get to cops at all times, and most of these people are drunk and in good moods. So the cops, they respond well to that. You know, there are a lot of nice officers downtown. The problem is there are a few who aren't as nice. And more than that, there are a lot of officers who might have short fuses, might be predisposed to being a bit more physical, being a bit more authoritative in the way that they handle things. And that's something that even the department acknowledges. In my story, I talked to Assistant Chief Chris McElvain, and he even says, when you are working down there, you go downtown, you go to work knowing that you're going to put your hands on somebody every night. That's a strange phenomenon for a police officer.
And some police watchdog groups, I guess you could call them that, you spoke to them too, and what were their concerns?
Well, this is Peaceful Streets, for the most part, which is the largest cop-watching activist group in Austin. But there are a few other auxiliary members who are friends and associate in some way with them. Their concerns are way more than just downtown. You know, their concerns have to do with issues of police brutality and official oppression all throughout the city and even kind of in places like City Hall. But I suppose the reason why they're so prevalent downtown is because that is the place where you will see the most officers in one area. That is where you see the most interaction. If you go to a patrol area up north, up to Runberg even, which is, you know, one of the more active regions in the city, you don't get a concentration of police officers like you do downtown. If you go downtown on a weekend, you see 36 to 45 officers downtown working amongst all these drunks and what have you. So I guess for them, it's their best opportunity to really put on display what they see as being very bad treatment.
Now, the police union, the Austin Police Association, also has been talking about officers having to patrol downtown.
Right. Well, this is a concern, I guess, of the association, is the short staffing and everything. That's not a good thing to have with a police department. You want appropriate levels of staffing. You want all of your officers feeling like they're working the right amount rather than being overworked. Whether it's because they either have too few people for too much space or because they can't funnel people in and out and make sure that people aren't getting tired of working downtown. There's just kind of a general feeling that a beat working downtown, which used to be very popular, is no longer popular among the rank and file, and they don't want to be there anymore.
They don't want to be having to deal with drunk people and potentially being filmed, arresting. It seems to me, as someone who used to live downtown and spent nights there, that the most sort of challenging area for policing would be between Brazos to I-35. That's where there's that huge concentration of bars. I mean, isn't that part of the problem?
Yeah, it is. You've got four straight blocks of bars. That's what makes money, and that's what people want to put out there, so that's what they're going to. And so you get this population of people that are coming around. They're not really thinking about taking care of their community or acting in their own best interests. I don't know if that excuses some of the things that officers will do to maintain authority and what is considered peace downtown, but it should not go unnoticed that any department or any individual who is required to oversee or police such a combustible area is going to have a hard time. And to some extent, our city needs to figure out a way to make it such that that four-block stretch is not just a set of fireworks in a bathroom every week.
Chase Hoffberger is a staff writer for the Austin Chronicle. You should go read his story on this at austinchronicle.com. Chase, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much.
There are more women in the workplace today than ever before, but it's no secret that men continue to dominate the executive ranks and boardrooms, and they earn more on average than women do for the same jobs. An Austin organization is trying to foster a community among women in various industries in the hopes of building a brighter business future for all women. For KUT statewide news show, The Texas Standard, Hadi Mawakde reports.
Hey, can I get your confirmation email? Okay, yeah, you're good.
There's a line of about 20 or 30 women standing outside the Empire Control Room, a bar in downtown Austin. They're not just here for drinks or a concert, though. There's a meetup for a local organization called Boss Babes ATX. Inside, there are women everywhere. Some are exchanging pleasantries, others business cards. And on the stage, there's a woman DJing and another about to speak into a microphone.
Okay, so welcome to the first meet of the year for Boss Babes ATX. I just gave a spiel 15 minutes before, so if you've already been here for a while, I apologize for the repeat. I want to introduce DJ Kay Callie.
Jane Harvey is the CEO of Boss Babes ATX. It's a relatively new organization that Harvey started with two friends when they were feeling a little stalled out in their own careers.
I had kind of hit a plateau, and we were constantly getting together and trying to encourage and empower one another to keep going. And then Jane had the crazy idea to help other people do it. And we thought that was a great idea, especially because we all have separate crafts. So we wanted to meet people that did the same things as us.
Ashley Pryor coordinates events and content for Boss Babes ATX. She says that Boss Babes gave her the connection she needed to get a new full-time job. Originally, the founders were hoping to find around 20, maybe 30 women to be in their group. But looking around the room with more than 500 women in the venue, it's pretty obvious that they've exceeded their expectations.
We clearly hit a nerve. There was something missing in Austin that we're not the only ones that needed it.
And these meets, they don't just appeal to creatives like the founders. They're attracting women from all sorts of industries.
Hello, everybody. My name is Shanti, and my business is Vanity Fire Photography.
Kayla Gabriel. I work at KUT in fundraising.
Brooke Boryak, and I work in PR at Redfin Communications.
Accountant Heather Labus credits the meetups for tripling her business.
Before I started going to the Boss Babes meetup, I only had, five clients. And then as soon as I started going to these meetups, I got referral after referral.
Labus says that most of her new clients are women that she's helping with back taxes and other accounting issues.
I think a lot of women at these meets have felt like they were taken advantage of by larger CPA firms. Some of them even expressed that they felt uncomfortable working with older men. They felt like they just weren't understood.
Now, while these meetups are fun and drinks are usually consumed, Boss Babe CEO Jane Claire Harvey says that's really not the point. It's about women staking a claim on their career paths and even reclaiming the label of babe.
It wasn't like we sat down, we were like, it'd be super fun to get a bunch of women in one room and toast our champagne glasses to our empowered causes and businesses. This really did grow out of like trying to assess and address inequality in industry, in creativity, in like cultural interactions.
This could be a big month for Harvey and her co-founders as they hope to expand Boss Babes ATX to other cities in Texas and across the nation. And who knows, maybe the month after, they'll be taking this thing worldwide. In Austin, I'm Hadi Mawagdi for the Texas Standard.
KUT Weekend for the first weekend of March 2016. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org. If you have any questions or comments, email news@kut.org. Our theme music is by RAC. Thanks again for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 at kut.org. And then,